Greetings, listeners. Radio Derb on the air here. And this is your phlegmatically genial host, John Derbyshire, with a roundup of the week's news. It was, of course, a triumphal week for the political left. If your tolerance for Nancy Pelosi grinning ecstatically into TV cameras is as low as mine, you've been drinking a lot of bourbon this week. Well, now the cannon smoke has cleared, let us survey the battlefield. So, what have we got in this new law, after 14 months in the congressional delivery room? Let's see. First off, that plan you have that covers your kids will now have to cover them up to age 26. Why 26? Presumably because that's the age when our offspring will finally start working. Once Professor Obama's plan to educate every single American up to graduate school level kicks in. My parents' generation left school at 14 to start bringing money into the family. My own generation mostly hung on till 18 or 21 for those of us who went to college. Now the nanny state wants you tied to the apron strings till age 26. Henry V was leading an army at the age of 16. William Pitt was Prime Minister of England at age 24. Charles Lindbergh flew the Atlantic at age 25. But in the mentality of our ruling classes, no red-blooded American is fit to heft a hammer or swing a sickle until age 26. Nor will those mewling, squealing, fidgeting, burping 25-year-olds of yours be denied health insurance or charged higher rates just because they're sick. Insurance companies won't be allowed to do that. And 4 years down the road, that rule will apply to all Americans. Insurance companies will have to insure you at healthy guy rates, even if you're sick. The obvious reflection here is, why would I ever buy any health insurance until I get sick? Along with, of course, the larger question, in what sense is this insurance? You might as well say that I can hold off buying life insurance until after I'm dead. Ah, but the government has an answer for that. We'll make you buy health insurance. If you don't buy it, we'll fine you. Okay, how much are they going to fine me? Well, it starts at 1% of my income in 2014, rising to 2.5% by 2016. 2.5% for me would be $2,000. So, Uncle Sam is going to force me to buy insurance, which at my current rate costs me $12,000 a year. If I refuse, he'll fine me $2,000. If I refuse and get sick, I can buy insurance at the regular rate anyway. Have the Congress critters really thought this through? Perhaps not. 14 months is the mere blink of an eye in Congress time. One thing the healthcare juggernaut seems to have done is to breathe new life into the 10th Amendment. That's the one that says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The 10th Amendment should not be confused with the 10th Commandment, which enjoins us not to covet our neighbour's ox, nor his ass, nor his gold-plated health insurance plan if he's a congressman, nor anything that is our neighbour's. Amendment, commandment, different things. Well, in the spirit of the 10th Amendment, 13 states, you're getting the symbolism there, 13? 13 states filed suit in a federal court on Tuesday, arguing that Congress has no power under the Constitution to force citizens to buy health insurance, or anything. The state of Virginia has lodged a separate, similar suit on its own account. So, should I decide to trade in my $12,000 a year insurance policy for a $2,000 a year fine, signing up with an insurer only when I get sick, should I choose to do that, I may even be off the hook for the fine, which will be unconstitutional if these state attorney generals win their case. This is looking like a better and better deal for me. Except that, if the population behaves rationally, as I intend to, the insurance companies will have no one on their books but sick people. That will surely raise premiums some. Rather a lot, in fact. In fact, since the only people paying premiums will be people getting medical treatment, it's hard to see why they wouldn't just cut out the middleman and contract directly with hospitals and doctors. I guess there'll be a federal fine for doing that, too. What else is in the bill? Let's see. No insurance policy will have to cover abortions. That's good. Now, I'm a black sheep in the National Review family, in that I couldn't care less about abortion. If people want to have abortions and doctors are willing to perform them, I'm fine with it. Still, I don't see why I should pay through my premiums for other people's mistakes. So the abortion provision is a minor plus, as far as I'm concerned. What else? People settled illegally in the USA won't be covered by these government health exchanges. Yeah, well, we know how that will turn out, don't we? The first time some scofflaw gets sick and is turned down by a health exchange, La Raza or Maldef or Lulac or Mecha or John McCain, will find themselves a friendly liberal judge and get this clause overturned, just like they do when a state tries to stop illegals getting state welfare benefits, or like this week's judgment in Texas, striking down a town ordinance to ban illegals from renting property. La Raza will get a lefty judge, there's hardly any other kind nowadays, and that'll be the end of that. Come to think of it, the same thing might happen with the abortion clause, so don't be crowing over that one either, just yet. Congress may propose, but it's the judges who dispose. What else? $500 trillion gets ripped out of Medicare, just as the baby boomers are retiring. What a great idea. Contrarywise, Medicaid gets a boost in funding. A kick for the old, a kiss for the poor. Sell seniors, buy paupers. Just another skirmish in the war against the middle classes. You follow the law, work hard, accumulate a little wealth, then along comes Uncle Sam to snatch it away from you. To hand it to, on the one hand, the fat cats put in charge of nationalized banks or agencies like Fannie Mae in return for political favors, and on the other, the feckless underclass. You're watching the slow strangulation of the middle class, folk. And then, of course, a whole raft of new taxes all around. What would a liberal social program be without new taxes to punish us for working, saving and investing? Meanwhile, what can one say about opponents of the healthcare bill? Well, if one is a liberal, one can call them all the bad names in the liberal playbook. Protesters outside the Capitol were supposed to have yelled racial and sexual slurs at Democrats going in, although amazingly, with one TV camera per square yard all the way back to the mall, no such slurs were actually recorded. We're hearing a lot of other stuff from liberal polls about how they're getting death threats, coffins parked on their lawns, packages of white powder sent to their offices, and so on. You know, conservatives are these beastly, savage people who want to commit acts of violence against legislators they disagree with. Liberals are the nice people, you see, the flower children who just want to help everybody. Oh my. Conservatives are gap-toothed, deranged knuckle-draggers who want to stomp the faces of the poor. You know the script. Well, look, allowing that no more than half of these claims are made up for dramatic effect, and supposing the other half to be real, so what? I've spent the last 10 years doing conservative commentary, pretty low down on the commentariat totem pole, and I couldn't count how much abuse I've taken from lefties. Not many death threats, to be sure. No more than half a dozen that I can recall. But, as I said, I'm not a big player. If you're a congressman, your office number's listed on the internet, and crazy people will call you and say crazy things. If you can't handle that, get a proper job. But, of course, there's political capital to be accumulated by playing up this stuff. I'm sure the accusations will get worse as the days go by, but I think the low point for this week was Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina playing the terrorist card.
I've seen how these things escalate. People out there in the streets get their signals, or what they think are their signals, from the people in positions like we hold. And so if we don't disown that and get our people to move beyond that, if we participate in it, either from the balcony or on the floor of the House, you are aiding and abetting this kind of terrorism, really.
Now, I do hope I'm not going to come across as cynical here. Perish the thought. But up to this point, I've never thought that liberals minded terrorism very much. What's to mind when you've spent your life swooning with admiration over Fidel Castro, Yasser Arafat, the Khmer Rouge, Kathy Boudin, and Bill Ayers? And then there's all the solicitude for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his pals getting full courtroom honours. If you're a leftist, even 9/11 can be stuck on the USA. Isn't that correct, Reverend Wright?
America's chickens are coming home to roost.
Although I should make it perfectly clear that Barack Obama was not present in the congregation when Reverend Wright let loose with that one. Absolutely not. He was totally unable to attend church that day. This has been proven beyond any doubt, and if you deny it,
you are aiding and abetting this kind of terrorism, really.
In other commentary on the healthcare bill, Fidel Castro called it a, quote, miracle. However, he chided President Obama for his lack of leadership on climate change and immigration reform. In similar endorsements, Kim Jong-il said that the healthcare bill was a triumph for the laboring masses of America over bourgeois imperialism. Hugo Chavez congratulated our president on having beaten back the forces of reaction and Yankee hegemony. Robert Mugabe published an open letter to the American people, assuring us that if we press forward on this revolutionary road, we shall soon enjoy a standard of health care comparable to Zimbabwe's. Colonel Gaddafi of Libya said that passage of the health care bill was the hand of Allah at work. President for life Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, the charismatic leader of Turkmenistan, ordered 10,000 sheep to be slaughtered for a public banquet in honour of the bill's passage. And our own Vice President Joe Biden declared that the healthcare triumph was an extremely big deal. Adverse comment was thoughtful and restrained. The New York Post opined that, quote, presently Democrats will be living with the political consequences, even as the nation struggles with what promises to be economic fallout over the next decade. A thoughtful editorial in my favorite newspaper, the Feudal Times and Reactionary Herald, foresaw another downward lurch in the death spiral of Western civilization as, quote, the world's last bastion of individual liberty, independence, self-government and self-support, sees a mighty breach made in its walls by the ballistae of utopian socialism. End quote. Who can disagree? Diplomatic brouhaha of the week was the chilly reception given to Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House on Tuesday. The municipal government of Jerusalem wants to build some housing in a district where the Arabs don't want it built, for reasons nobody can explain to me. The Arabs are squealing and stamping their feet and swearing they'll take their ball and go home, because Israel won't play nice. The Arabs tell us they really, really want peace and normal relations with Israel. But it's impossible because those scheming Jews thwart them at every turn. Leaving aside the fact that you can't find an Arab alive, or well, certainly not an Arab politician, who thinks that Israel has any right to exist, let me just put this in a larger context for you. Barack Obama and his cabinet are fully signed up members of EFTA, E-F-T-A. That is the Easier for Them Association. One of the ground rules of government work is always go for the soft target. For example, try walking into your local bank with a hood and a sawn-off shotgun and demand that they open the tills. When the cops finally arrive, they will treat you with scrupulous respect, reading you your rights, being careful not to manhandle you, picking up your attorney on the way back to the station house. If they're ungracious enough to bring you to trial, you'll get 6 months probation from a sympathetic judge, who'll make a moving speech about root causes and the curse of poverty. Now, try driving at night with a broken tail light. You will be tased and clubbed to the ground, then hauled off to the station house in a gunny sack. At trial, you'll be given 5 years without the option. You're a soft target, you see. This is why the middle-class homeowner who underreports his income by $200 gets the IRS chopper shining searchlights through his bedroom window at 3 a.m., while Charlie Rangel gets a free pass on the $500,000 back tax that he owes. Government people always go for the soft target. It's easier for them. Less work, less chance of embarrassing resistance. Well, in the Middle East, Israel is the soft target. It's a civilized country, with an electorate that wants its leaders to be capable and honest. The Arabs are, on the other hand, scary. Blowing themselves up, running gangster governments, shooting missiles at random into towns, gibbering about 72 virgins and the world caliphate. They are the bank robbers in this scenario. Israel is the middle-class schmuck with a broken taillight. Don't tase me, bro! Michael Moore was obliged to cancel an appearance at the University of Ottawa after a crowd of 2,000 conservative hoodlums threatened to shut down the event by violence.
I'm just screwing with you.
It was, of course, Ann Coulter whose event was cancelled by those threats of violence. And the hoodlums were, of course, leftists. When does a lefty ever get shut out of a college by a mob of conservative students? Has this ever happened anywhere? The hoodlums in our colleges are all on the left. Some of them are at high levels in college administration. For example, François Houle, a vice president at the University of Ottawa, who was totally on the side of the mob. He actually wrote to Anne before her appearance, telling her that if anything she said hurt anyone's feelings, she'd be tased, thrown in the gunny sack, and hauled off to the Ministry of Love to have her thoughts rectified. There's been mixed commentary about all this on the conservative blogs. Some of the more serious-minded types among us consider Anne a bit of a buffoon. She has that kind of acidic sense of humour that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, especially people who have no sense of humour themselves, which is to say practically the entire political left, but also a lot of conservatives. Anne's shtick, for all its apparent spontaneity, is a very carefully calculated one, stepping over the line just precisely as much as you can without big networks and publishers pulling the plug on you. She's frankly imperialist, believing that we should spend our national wealth putting other countries to rights at a couple of $1 trillion a pop. She's a creationist, not from any thought-out philosophical position, but just from sheer ignorance. And so on and so on. Well, fair enough. But how many figures do we have on the right with Anne's wit and courage, or with Anne's dogged refusal to give an inch to the enemy? I like the lady. She's one of the few, the very few conservatives that, every time I see them in action, bring to my mind the thought, thank goodness she's on our side. She's done us a service in this case, anyway, exposing yet again the shallow cowardice and corruption of the Western world's universities, the creeping totalitarianism that is taking over our intellectual life, and the dull-witted vindictiveness of those who should be upholding standards of free speech, free inquiry, and free assembly, but who instead choose to slam their doors on ideas that find no favour with the screeching leftist mobs who now police much of our public discourse. Faithful listeners know what comes next. Yes, it's our closing miscellany of brief items. Item: Toyota won a round in its ongoing war against out-of-control trial lawyers and their congressional shills. A lady in the town of Harrison, north of New York City, had claimed that the gas pedal on her Toyota Prius had stuck and the brake wouldn't respond, causing her to crash into a wall. An analysis of the car's computers by federal safety regulators shows that she never, in fact, depressed the brake. The lady just got her pedals mixed up, just like all those other people claiming, or having attorneys claim for them, that their Toyota ran off with them and wouldn't brake. I once again declare my determination that my next car will be a Toyota, just to stick a finger in the eye of the industry-wrecking trial lawyer bar. Star exhibit, ex-Senator John Edwards. Item: a little show business news. I don't do half as much showbiz news as I should. The 15 Minutes of Fame award this week goes to Michelle McGee, whose thoroughly tattooed bod has been gracing the pages of our tabloid newspapers on account of her having been found to have played leapfrog with Jesse James. Not the weasel-faced 19th century outlaw, but the weasel-hearted 21st century husband of movie star Sandra Bullock. These people have so much more money than I do, I have to work hard to squeeze out any sympathy for them. But Ms. Bullock is one of those rare cases of a movie star who, to the best of my knowledge, has never made a nutty left-wing pronouncement. Furthermore, she was a good sport showing up to collect her Razzie Award for Worst Actress. So I offer her my condolences. I hope she kicks the bum out, and I stand ready to write her a movie script that is not deeply patronising to African Americans. Just have your people call my people, Sandra, okay? Item: if you've ever wrestled personally with the US Immigration Service, you know a thing that most native-born Americans don't know, that while there are some decent people in the service trying to do a decent job, or at least not to screw up too badly till they reach pension age, the whole thing is mismanaged and hopelessly overburdened. It would be too much to expect immigration managers to fess up to mismanagement, but at least they're coming clean about having far more cases than they can possibly handle. Here's Frank Deffer, Assistant Inspector General in the Homeland Security Department, talking to the Immigration Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee this week. Quote, adding 12 million more people to the system would be the mother of all backlogs. Clearly to us, the systems could not handle it now. End quote. Just something to bear in mind when you hear airhead politicians talk about monitoring all those conditions they're going to attach to that path to citizenship. You know, paying back taxes, learning English, paying fines, providing valid documents. None of that will happen. It'll all get lost in the bureaucracy. Take it from me. I was lost in the bureaucracy for 7 years, and I wasn't one of a 12 million strong tsunami. Whatever you think of amnesty as a political or moral issue, it will be an administrative fiasco. Item. Google has definitely pulled out of China, relocating its China traffic to a Hong Kong Google. The CHICOMs reacted by saying that the Chinese people's feelings had been deeply hurt by the move, and that Google was a wholly owned subsidiary of the CIA. This is one episode in a long-range plan by the CHICOMs to hack into our military, financial, and commercial websites, to shortcut their own development costs, and to set us up for a major crippling cyber assault when the invasion of Taiwan goes ahead 3 or 4 years from now. I commend Google for taking a stand, but it won't make much difference. Item, here's a phrase you may be hearing a lot soon. Pension apartheid. I picked it up from the British press. What's happening over there is that the British Treasury is changing the tax rules so that private sector pensions take a hit. Pensions in the public sector, however, are left pretty much untouched. If that doesn't sound familiar over here, trust me, it soon will. Call your kids in. Shut the door. Sit them down. Now make them repeat after you 100 times. I must get a government job. That's it, folks. A week of triumph for the government people, a week of despair for the rest of us. Remember Obama's budget for next fiscal year? It came out in February. That's February as in last month. And it projected $8.5 trillion total deficit across the next 10 years. Well, that was last month. The CBO just put out a revised estimate that is $1.2 trillion higher. Next month, who knows? Just make sure you have a good sturdy wheelbarrow in the garden shed. You'll be needing it to trundle round those heaped bundles of $100 bills to pay for the week's groceries with. Take it from me, this administration's policies are going nowhere good.
Ray, 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 is it is here to stay? There are bad times just around the corner. There are dark clouds hurtling through the sky. And it's no good whining about a silver lining, for we know experience that they won't rule by.
With a scowl and a frown, we'll keep our peckers down and prepare for depression and doom and dread.